Yo, what is up? Yo, we are back, y'all. We are actually fully back, y'all. We got a great one for you today because this is going to be a very special, no, not really special, but this is the Return to Rugby episode. Y'all, we are going to be talking about, yo, MLR's return. Yo, first week went by. What the thoughts are going through with that? Going to be talking a little bit of HSBC 7's LA, man. USA, we got a lot to talk about as well as what the rest of the world is doing. Man, we're going to be talking NRL Las Vegas 7's. What were the results that came off from that? There was a lot to be able to pull from there as well. Of course, that's not it. World Rugby gives us a five-point plan to be able to see the changes in rugby that are needed. Pacific Nations Cup is set to change rugby in the USA. American Series is coming back. And, of course, our comments. Y'all, we got a great episode. I hope you guys are ready for it. Yo, this is Rugby Swag. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Welcome to the Rugby Swag Show.
And welcome to Rugby Swag. My name is Gift Time and Baylor. Of course, this is a show where we talk to people about the amazing thing that they've been doing while keeping you up to date with what's going on within the rugby world itself, man. Y'all, I am so excited to be able to be back with y'all. It has been a while. I know, but you know what? That's the price of being able to go enjoy great rugby in different places. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that. But in the meantime, y'all, I need you guys to please go ahead and hit that subscribe button and let us know that you like it over here for this. I have Gift Time Rugby on YouTube. And please also hit that like button because I need to know so the algorithm knows so that we can make sure we're getting it all together. On top of that, y'all, if you guys want to be able to check us out outside of the YouTube pages, check us out over on Instagram at Rugby Swag Show. Please hit us with a follow. Of course, you can follow us on X at Gift A Bailu, GIFTEGBELU. And of course, if you want, you can hit Gift Time Rugby page as well. We drop things there. And then, of course, for everywhere else, it is Gift Time with two T's, Rugby on Facebook, on TikTok, and on Twitch. So I hope that you guys are absolutely having a great one this week. And if you're unable to be able to catch us on YouTube or be able to see anything happening on the social media pages, definitely take a listen, share with your friends, let them be known over on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and so many others that are your primary streaming services for podcasting. So, yo, I just need the love. Thanks to like. Thank you for all the time that you guys have been able to provide and give and just be able to support what we do here on Rugby Swag. Y'all, man, it's been a good couple weeks, man. As you guys know, I went out to, if you guys don't know, but most of you, if you'd been listening before, I said I'm heading out to Bangkok 10's International Rugby Tournament, which was amazing. Went out there with my guys, the Tokyo Gaijin, based out of, obviously, Tokyo, Japan. Team's been my travel team since 2016, and I hadn't had a chance to play with them since prior to the pandemic. That's 2018 was the last time I got a chance to play with them. And man, this tournament continues to be one of the best in the game, top to bottom, every single time. It does not miss. And I got to say, like, if you guys got a chance to check out the interview that I did with Eddie Evans, who is the founder of the Bangkok 10's International Tournament, I actually have it posted on there. You guys can go check it out. I say that he has done an immaculate job, especially almost 10 years now. So it's been 8 years that he's done this tournament. It's grown so much. He had 100 people, 100 teams, 2,000 people from all levels, veterans, youth, men's, women's, like touch rugby. Like, it hit all the spectrums that you'd want to be able to hit when it comes to doing this rugby game. So, like, I mean, look, man, and on top of that, getting a chance to re-meet people, like, this was one that, you know, my friends are out there, you know, in Thailand, you know, got to see, obviously, Eddie and Joe, getting a chance to see them, the owners, being able to meet up with Champagne Rugby, Hamish and Anna, who are doing a great doc. Obviously, checking out my boy Jason and his daughter out there. You know, even got to meet some of the people who've been able to follow us. Shout out to Joe Ritchie. Absolutely pleasure seeing him again. I hadn't seen him since Rugby World Cup 2019. Absolute pleasure to be able to talk. And then obviously so many, you know, give a lot of credit to Eddie for allowing me to perform on stage at the Bangkok 10's social. I got a little bit of a punishment with my Tokyo guys because, you know, we don't solo tour, but it was worth it. You know, shout out to Raw, Fex, everybody in the band, you know, who performed, everybody who even performed before that. Like, it was a night. And honestly, you know what? I don't want to just be about it and talk about it. Yo, my boy Jason put together a great little short piece on the Bangkok 10s. Definitely want to check it out. So give me one second while I pull this baby up. Where are you? There we go. All right. Getting it all, getting it up. There we go. All right, check this out, y'all.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's back. The Bangkok International Rugby Team. One, two, three, putting this country on the map when it comes to rugby now.
Absolutely having a ball of the time.
I love it. Absolutely love it.
Imagine that, you know, the rugby here will be so strong.
The boys have just scored.
In the background.
It's a tournament everybody wants to come to.
Bangkok 10 is the best tournament on the year.
We'll have a few more beers and then I'll endorse it.
This morning. Obviously, team talked until very early this morning.
Southeast Asia's biggest rugby party has arrived. Let's do it.
All right, y'all. I don't want to give everything away. You guys can actually go check out the full video over at Jason Bray, a YouTube page. Literally Jason Bray. And absolutely go take a look at the full video. Great look into Jason and the Bangkok 10, something that we've, you know, perennially been there, but man, it was just a great tournament overall. I genuinely believe that there needs to be more USA teams that make it over to Thailand, which is also just an absolutely beautiful country. Bangkok is an amazingly fun city. I consider it Las Vegas for Southeast Asia, if you may. Like Las Vegas in the 90s, not Las Vegas currently. But I consider it to be one that's memorable. Actually, one of the funnest places to be. People are absolutely dope. Shout out to the Bangkok Bangers and the rugby community that's out there. You know, shout out to my people Ping and all of them that we're doing it with. Nak Su, which is the youth team. This is also a charity tournament. So, like, to be able to, you know, get the full effect of it is just like, man, it can't be said more. It can't be said more. And like I said, it is something that I enjoy. I'm so happy to have been able to go. And like I said, I recommend it to anybody to be able to make it out there for that tournament. So if you guys get a chance, definitely go check it out. Like I said, check out Jason Braze. Also, check out Champagne Rugby if you guys haven't seen it. They got a mini doc going on with Bangkok 10s, and they're going to be doing one about Thailand, which is going to be marvelous, man. Just a great group of people being able to do it. Great guy in Hamish getting it done and doing the work to be able to grow rugby in his way and in a way that we all want to be able to do it. So, all right. So I want to get on to the next bit of the show. Of course, we can't continue on without giving a little bit of credit to the people who absolutely help us get by. And that's definitely going out to Health Enhanced Foods. Y'all, I absolutely say that you guys need to go check out the products over there. Health Enhanced Foods giving you the best specialty flours in the business. Make sure that you can have the bread mixes that aren't going to inflate your stomach, but are also going to help your body and be able to make sure that you are able to perform at the best. We're going to be right back with our next story after these messages. You guys just hang on. This is the Rugby Swag Show with Gift Time and Bailu. We're back. Welcome back. And let's get it on.
I'm going to let you get back to the show in a moment, but I want to talk to you about our sponsors, Health Enhanced Foods, the best specialty flours in the business. What does that mean for you? That is the flours that allow you to be able to get the nutritious need from your bread made. That's muffins, bread, croissants, whatever, pancakes and muffins. It will give you the opportunity to be able to get the best while still being able to eat like you wanted to. We have various amounts of products available for those who have special dietary needs to those who are looking for a special health outcome. And of course, because they're part of the Rugby Swag Show, we want to let you know that you got a chance to go to healthenhancedfoods.com and use code RugbySwag to be able to get 20% off your first order. Y'all, this is something that you're going to need. You got to build up, have your energy at the best, be the maximum. It's 2024. Let's do the best. But now, I want you guys to get into it. Let's get back to the show.
Man, all right. So we are kicking off as per usual. Major League Rugby is back, y'all. We had a great first weekend. Man, let's talk about this, man. Like this is one I think is one of the most anticipated weekends for rugby, for Major League Rugby in the now seventh season that it's been around. Seven seasons through the pandemic, continue the struggles, but we are still here. Major League Rugby is still absolutely here, and it's a great one because we have some new teams that absolutely came in. Obviously, added three expansion teams in the Miami Sharks, the Los Angeles Rugby Club, and the Anthem Carolina, Anthem Charlotte Club in, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina, all right? So, obviously, to kick off this, we had to do a little bit memorable. Let's go down the scores that happened for this week. One, shout out to my NOLA Gold, absolutely doing what they're supposed to do, getting the win over the longtime rivalry, which isn't really a rivalry because NOLA Gold has beat them all but like one time since their inception. And that one time was literally last year, New Orleans beating them 18-6 old at home. Houston Sabercats be able to protect their house 22-15 against the Utah Warriors. Seattle Seahawks, these guys are coming up as a powerhouse and returning back to form, winning a nail biter of a game 25-19 against the San Diego Legion. Miami Sharks hosting their first game in a really soppy mess, and we're going to talk about that. Unfortunately, not able to open up with a strong one going in 1923, losing to Chicago Hounds. Anthem Rugby opened up at home to a crowd of, I think they said, like 2,700 people against the reigning champions, New England Free Jacks, losing 13-46. Give them credit where credit is due. They got that 13. And then the Los Angeles, RFC Los Angeles, dropping a heartbreaker of one to open up against Dallas Jackals at home at wave night, man. West Coast timing on these were not good. But losing 29-32. Shout out to the Jackals for getting their first opening win since their existence. And Leal, like, this one was one of those where I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna be too harsh about this one, because I'm making a promise to myself to not be overly critical of the MLR, because I think it's kind of becoming a trend, and I don't want that to be a trend. You know, I think there's good things, and again, you're in the seventh season, so you got some things going on. I will throw some critiques, but I'm gonna throw some praises first. Number one, I want to say, man, love the fact that New England Free Jacks came out on pure fire. Pure fire. It's like they picked up right where they left off with the championship team. That is another contender where you just are like, yo, this team is stacked, absolutely stacked. They're going to do some amazing things without a doubt. And in that situation, they absolutely proved it up against freaking Enola, against Anthem. Which, again, tough outing. Again, Anthem is coming in. They are trying to be able to establish, obviously, if you don't remember, the Anthem are the World Rugby, USA Rugby partnered created team that is going to be helping with USA Rugby Eagles developmental players to be able to get more action going on with that. So, tough game for them to go into, but, man, I loved it. That one was, I mean, obviously, it's a complete blowout, but that was worth watching New England be able to come out strong. Other games, Seattle and San Diego, two other powerhouses. I love the fact that Seattle's coming out strong after so many years, really two of the last 4 years, like Seattle just had been kind of struggling, to kind of see them coming back into form like they were the first two seasons that they were in existence, 2018, 2019. I like seeing that they're a powerhouse. San Diego coming out with some strength. Another big surprise, Houston. Again, that was a team that was a big dark horse last year. It kind of flopped towards the end of the season. But, man, I love that they did. Warriors were a good team. I think they're doing what they need to. I love the fact New Orleans, like I said, you know, I'm always going to be supportive of Enola Gold. You know, they came out and they set themselves up slowly in the first half, but they set themselves up to at least have a campaign where they're starting off on a win. Again, a team that's been struggling the last couple years. I'm glad to see them coming back into their own. And then, of course, like I said, Dallas Jackals. I'm glad to see them finding their rhythm as a team, albeit they were able to be advantaged by four yellow cards by RFC LA. But, like, hey, man, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due. They got the win. Again, being the former expansion team, to be able to show out and say, oh, as an expansion team, you need to understand who's baby brother out here. Yo, I'm glad Dallas was able to do it too. Formerly Atlanta, now LA as their team for it. So, look, we're going to let me talk. Okay, the critiques that I had. All right. Number one, man, Miami. Well, we got to do something about that broadcast, y'all. I'll actually put a lot of responsibility on Miami. I know it was an absolute storm of a game. Welcome to hurricane season. It's not really quite hurricane season, but it's Florida. There's always hurricane season, especially whenever climate is all jacked up and uncertain at this point. But you had a Miami Sharks team that just wasn't able to swim in this one. I have so much expectation from the team, not necessarily from a winning standpoint, but from an entertainment standpoint. And I really thought that they were going to bring out all the markers with it. Like, they were going to really roll out the red carpet. And I'm sure maybe the storms played a little bit, because there's rain delay and it can throw off your scheduling and everything like that. But, man, they didn't open up. It was such a dreary opening. Great crowd, it looked like from the video, but, like, just so dreary. I thought they were going to come out with music, hit that Latin behavior, like enter into Miami with the flavor of Argentina or flavor of Cuba, or, you know, really bring out that element. Even if they were playing in Fort Lauderdale, like you really have an opportunity to like come out with a bang, because I don't expect them to win a lot of games because it's cohesion. Like it takes time. But like, I did expect them to just come out with flair and favor, and they just did not. They did not. And, you know, Chicago Hounds did what they needed to do in a close one, 23-19. You know, you do what you got to do. But I really was hoping for that. And that was just kind of the same with all the expansion teams. L.A., I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that there was, like, nobody inside that stadium. There was literally, like, no – like, if there were, the cameras did not catch any of it. But – it was a later game for the West Coast. Obviously, it was like an 11 o'clock game on a Sunday on for the East Coast, and God forbid here in Brazil. But like, when you have cities this big, especially whenever you're trying to set the marker, I really expect that you're supposed to like really bring that full fire and absolutely give an energy that goes along with it. I think the NRL did something like that with Las Vegas. And obviously we'll talk about that a little bit later. But like, bruh, you're in LA and you still kind of just like, you just come into it. I'm a little sad about that one. And then even with the anthem, I think the anthem actually brought a lot more energy, probably because of the fact that New England Free Jacks were there, but I felt like that one had an energy. Maybe not to the extent that like it was an entertainment behemoth, but it's also Charlotte. Like, you know, Charlotte has a lot, but it's not like an entertainment hub. So whenever you're not an entertainment hub, I don't expect you to have that same capability. But I would have liked those expansion teams to really smack us in the face, especially in season 7, whenever there's things that are established. But in terms of the full broadcast, I think it was legit. Like I said, that Hounds Miami game, horrible game, but you know, it's good kind of start off. This is a good start to the season. The other one, I did worry with the anthem being that this is a USA development team. Obviously, they went against the best of the best in MLR, man. What's his name? The fullback McDonald, I think the guy from New Zealand, the redhead from New Zealand, absolutely just snatching balls out the air. So I give a little bit of leeway for the anthem to be able to, again, get themselves together, be able to customize. Like, these are young. This is the youngest team, I think, in the MLR right now. So they have to acclimate very strongly to what is going to be happening with all these veteran players from other countries to be able to compete. But I have high hopes. I'm not giving up on them. Just not the greatest start. But again, there wasn't that much expectation. But let me know what you guys think, man. What's your thoughts on what was going on with the MLR? How do you feel like this one opened up for you? Because this was a big weekend. Like, there was a lot of rugby that happened. Super Rugby, MLR, URC was back, NRL, freaking HSB7s. Like, we went coast-to-coast rugby. I don't think there's been this much rugby from a high level at the same time that all mattered in a very long time. I'm not going to even hit all of them, but like it was significant, man. I love it. So let me know what your guys' thoughts were when it came to MLR on this one. All right, moving on, let's talk about LA Sevens. All right, LA Sevens, man. HSBC Sevens came through and said, yo, we are really trying to build up to make sure that we can make our mark the way that we need to make our mark. Man, when you say shout out to France and shout out to New Zealand women, France men for getting the win. This was the first time in 15 years that the LA men, that the French men got a win in the series, man. And shout out to Antoine Dupont, who seems to clearly be the LeBron of rugby in them, because what has happened to the French 15s team, and then what is happening with the French 7s team? I saw an article talking about it's a disingenuous look to talk about how Antoine Dupont is changing the game for France and taking away from the work that they did. France wasn't winning. They weren't winning in the medal matches, okay? Like, what can you say? Antoine Dupont came on and all of a sudden they're at the gold medal match. The man literally has earned his player of the year, multiple time player of the year, acclaim for everyone. Like, what are we going to talk about, man? Absolute beast. Obviously, New Zealand women absolutely getting it. Shout out to Portia Woodman, 50th cap, which is amazing because she's been playing for 10 years. 10 years that she has been playing, and she's only getting her 50th cap. Like, that's nuts. That's in, I guess, in seven series, because she's also played seven. She also plays 15s as well. Like, that is insane to be able to get done. So I got to give a lot of credit to that, man. And she's still performing. Again, she is, I think, without a doubt, the single best rugby player, women's rugby player, and a top five, maybe top 10 all-time rugby player. In my opinion, I know we got a lot of people that you can put into, but when you talk about competition, skill set, and based off of the diversity of skill set, I got to give Portia Woodman a top 10 look all time, definitely in terms of iconicism. So, man, that one's great. I want to look now specifically over at the USA, because this one was a little bit of an interesting one, because it's been a buildup. We had Vancouver the week prior to it, where we start seeing more improvement. The women got, I think, fourth place in Vancouver, and I'm glad that they ended up coming in bronze. Of course, we wanted them to finish in, you know, first place, but we got to talk about how our weakness with Australia is a very, very real one. So let's look at the scores that the women had for this HSBC Sevens in LA, all right? First off, women took on Spain to top off pool matches, beat them 40-6. Absolutely great, because Spain women are an absolutely developing team. USA took on Great Britain, destroyed them 34-7. Again, another one that is absolutely necessary to look at and great to see, because of the fact that Great Britain has been the other team that absolutely annihilated the U.S. in the Olympics back in 2020-2021. USA would then take on Canada, beating them 22-19. Again, great to take out our rival and to end up being perfect in pool play, as a meddling team should absolutely do. Then they would go on to the quarterfinals to take on South Africa, beating South Africa 24-7. Now, let me just do a quick segue over here. The fact that we are seeing the growth of South Africa women and Brazil women is something that I don't think we're appreciating as much. I know I'm talking about the U.S. typically, but I really wanted to point this out, because Brazil women, when we first saw them in 2016 really come out, were horrendous, absolutely horrendous. But in the last couple years, the amount of talent that they've been able to put in, and we saw them beat Ireland just a few series ago, two series ago, and seeing South Africa women getting more and more attention by their South African program overall in sevens, I think is phenomenal. It's something that we saw the same kind of rise with Fiji, and I love that this attention to detail is going on, because they're both going to be representing in the Olympics, and I think that those how they're resulting in the Olympics, even though they're not doing great right now in terms of the standings of HSBC, but they are still amongst the best. Even if they're the bottom of the HSBC series, they're amongst the best in the world, and I love the fact that we're seeing that growth. So big shout out to South Africa and Brazil women for being able to get their come ups that way. But on top of that, we're also getting to see, like, after that, we had USA going against Australia, losing to them 19-26. And y'all, this game, like, we are not able to do anything against Australia. I don't know. They are our absolute kryptonite. They have beat us in every single quarterfinals. Every single quarterfinals that we've faced them in since this series started this season. Like, Australia has our number. I don't know why we are not able to. like Faith Nathan is so fast off the edge. Charlotte Catholic seems to be cutting up. Madison, what's her name, seems to just be absolutely just bullying through us. And for some reason, they have the defense to neutralize Ilione, neutralize our women. And I don't get it. I don't get it. We have seen them so much, and it scares me for the Olympics because they're literally between us and a gold medal. Because once again, we ended up falling out of the semifinals and going up against Canada to be able to beat them 21-7 to get the bronze. And obviously, Australia went off, played against New Zealand. New Zealand ended up winning. That's always a back and forth. I feel like they always come back and forth with each other on that one. But it was just like, it's frustrating. It is frustrating to see that our women are so talented and we are absolutely getting hawked by Australia. Every single quarterfinals in the series, every single quarterfinals or semifinals, whatever reason, we do not get past that team. And so looking at it now, obviously Australia is top of the league. They've been absolutely killing it. But, you know, when it comes to the standings, Australia number one, New Zealand number two, France number three, USA number four, Canada, Ireland, Fiji, and Great Britain to solve out the top eight. And then afterwards, you have Brazil, South Africa, Japan, and then subsequently Spain to the bottom four. Now, the reason though bottom four is very important is because at the end of the series, there's going to be a Challengers Cup versus the bottom four to be able to see who's going to be replacing who, or a chance to compete to replace teams to enter into the next year's HSBC 7 series. So this is very significant, and this is going to make a big difference because when we go look at the men's, this is something that we need to really be worried about going into. So let's go talk into the men's side, where less than appealing outing, but a great start again. We saw this in Vancouver, a great start to the men. We had let's go down the scores. USA men took on Samoa, beating them 31-12. USA beaten losing to Australia 12-17, and then coming back to beat New Zealand 28-19. Men would fall then to France in the quarterfinals, 14-0. Obviously, France would go on to become the champions. And then we would lose to Australia again, 24-14, to finish eighth in the series, which has been our perennial spot throughout this series. Now, before I go into the criticism, man, let's give the biggest shout out to the great one, the legend, Perry Baker, for absolutely getting 200 and freaking 80 bloody scores in the 7 series. All right. Like, hold on. Like, I gotta put on the play that did it, because obviously I've said this multiple times. I don't think Perry Baker gets the public credit that he deserves for literally being a legend on the team. He does not get the public credit that he 100% deserves for being this amazing on the USA team. And it is literally a shame that that happens each time. All right, so let me throw on this video. All right.
Schrader. Anufe looks in front of him. Henry Hutchison is all he sees. Hughes. Cummins, Bitzer, Baker. Baker. Baker with space. Baker with space. He doesn't need much, and he'll cross over and bring the United States right back into this game. Well, they needed some energy. They needed something special. And you can mark that down to Maka Nuve. He's the one that brought a bit of heat at the breakdown to get the turnover. And from there, there was multiple fences, three times that went across the field. This is the third one. And Perry Baker, you see him put the hammer down. Ridiculous. Chuck it straight into fifth. And there's no way anyone's catching Perry Baker when he gets into that gear.
Ridiculous.
A much-needed try from the United States.
Bruh, like, absolutely ridiculous. absolutely ridiculous. The man is an absolute monster. He's a legend, Hall of Famer. There is nothing that he has not accomplished except for being able to get those actual medals on his chest. And we really needed him to get that. But this goes back to what happens with the men. Like, we keep faltering once we get into the knockout stages. And there's been, you know, conversation, you know, is Mike Friday really the one that's going to be able to take us anymore? But who's going to be there to replace it? Like, we can't be like, okay, Mike Friday has hit us to our limit, because he always puts us at the door. I think a friend of mine put it and said it great. He's like, Mike Friday has been able to coach us to be able to be knocking on the door. But for whatever reason, we are completely, completely unable to break through that door and get over inside the house. And again, it says a lot. I had obviously just did an interview with Demonte Noble, who put some opinions on that. And if you guys go check out Great American Rugby, he talks with Mike Friday often. But like, yo, it is exhausting at this point. Once again, another 7th, 8th, 9th place finish for the USA men, who are 100% talented enough to be able to do this, 100% have the experience to be able to get over the top. But for whatever reason, when it comes down to the games that matter the most, this is whenever we absolutely disappear and we completely flop, and it is looking like we're going to do this again for the Olympics. Once again, come in with high hopes, come in with the expectations, and then right whenever it counts the most. That is hurting my heart, because once again, it would be a God dog shame for Perry Baker, two-time World Rugby Player of the Year, possibly could be a third one. And I know a lot of people go like, he's 37. Yo, I'm 37. The man's a week older than me. Like, yo, 37 ain't old, but the man is coming to the end of his career. And the fact that he has not had a significant win as a team, I know it's not just an individual thing, but as a team, considering the amount of work that he has been able to do, considering the amount of time and how much he has absolutely changed the face of USA Sevens rugby in the US and around the world. The fact that we have not been able to just get a good placement in years, I think it's been at least 3 years since we won at least a first place, which was what, London? Maybe 2-3 years ago? Maybe we did it in LA 2 years ago. But we definitely didn't do it for the Olympics. We definitely didn't do it for the Rugby World Cup Sevens. And we haven't done it consistently. We haven't even medaled consistently. And each of the last Olympics that we've done have been 7th and 8th place finish, 9th place finishes. So we can't do that. We're too good to do this. And seeing it goes that much more, and it hurts my heart, because when you look at the standing, the USA is sitting strong in 8th place. Strong. We are at the line to be able to be relegated to have to compete in the Challengers Cup. All right. We are one bad series away from being relegated, being forced to relegate and defend ourselves to stay in the HSBC 7 series. And if we get relegated down to Challengers with the level of talent that we've had on this team for all this time, that would be the most crucial shame that we had. Looking at the standings for those, obviously, if you're not watching on YouTube, then you look at, it's Argentina number one, Ireland number two, Fiji, France, Australia taking up 3, 4, 5, New Zealand, and South Africa at 7, which I think history has always told us South Africa should really be better. And the fact that South Africa still has to go through repêché to be able to qualify for the Olympics is incredibly wild to me, in incredibly wild. But it is literally a shame that we are sitting at 8th place as the men's, and we still got what? We still have three more series left, but this last one, two more qualifying series, and then the last one is a championship series. If we falter in any of the two and get below 8 in any of the two, we're in relegation. And thank God we already have qualification for the Olympics, because if we needed this to get in, we are effed. Absolutely effed. And it does not make any sense whatsoever why we should be in this position. So let me know what you guys think on this one, man. Like, where is your thoughts on why the USA men's seems to just be faltering so much inside these games? It is a level of aggravation that I don't understand. But also on the flip side, man, What is your thoughts on the women's side? Like, what is the potential for them to be able to get a medal for the Olympics? Because this is what this is all leading for. Like, let's call a spade a spade. Like, HSBC 7 Series is great, but ain't nothing more important than what they're going to do for the Olympics. That's what matters. The Rugby World Cup 7s doesn't matter like the Olympics. The HSBC 7s Championship doesn't matter like the Olympics. What happens this year, 2024, in Paris, when it's all said and done, is where it all comes down to. And can the USA women find a way to be able to get across, get past Australia, to be able to be in a meaningful championship? I want to know what you guys' thoughts are. Let me know in the comments when you get a chance, or hit me up within the videos to be able to know. Let me know what you guys think, man, because I'm just frustrated with the men's, but man, shout out, you know, to LA7s going well. Great series, and it seems like it was another success considering the split of attention that happened. And talking about the split of attention, yo, let us talk about the NRL Las Vegas, as we like to call it. NRL Las Vegas, where for the first time ever, the National Rugby League found their way over to USA territory to sign a 5-year deal to play games in Las Vegas at Allegiant Stadium, which is amazing. This year, you know, it was definitely one that I feel like it was a mixed feeling, but it was a good start in a sense. So kind of right off the bat, like off rip, like the game brought in 40,000 people to the crowd. I have friends that were out there from Roots Rugby. Shout out to Kyle Granby being able to represent USA Rugby League as USA against Canada out there. Shout out to Great American Rugby, Lance Cavanaugh, for being able to be a VIP representative over at that. Looking at their videos and stories, like the game looked like it was like legit dope. Like it was a great environment, something that people really were able to connect into. And again, if you guys realize, like Allegiant Stadium is really only like 60,000, I think 61, 62,000 people. So you basically had an 80% full crowd. Yeah, 80% full crowd inside that stadium, whether they came from Australia or not. Like, that's a really good outcome that comes with it. Negative side, on the other hand, though, is that the TV crowd was none too impressive. From what they said was the numbers, it was 61,000 viewers watched the Rabbitohs versus Manly Sea Eagles, South Sydney Rabbitohs versus the Manly Sea Eagles, and then it dropped to 44,000 viewers for the Sydney Roosters versus the Brisbane Broncos. So, like, definitely a mixed bag, but I do think there's an explanation to it. But I'm going to go into it at the end of this. So let's kind of go over what the scores were for this. First off, you had the Manly Sea Eagles, who, as my friend calls them, Hugh Jackman's team, versus the South Sydney Rabbitohs, a team of famously of Russell Crowe, who ended up winning. Sea Eagles ended up winning the game 36-34. To be able to get the first ever NRL win on U.S. soil. I think the Rabbitohs scored first, but apparently, as I'm understanding it, the elitists of the Manly Sea Eagles were able to take it overall. Very interesting match. I looked at watched the highlights initially for it, and I was like, the tackling sucks. But as I got to watch a full game later on that's active on YouTube, or I guess maybe on Fox Sports, if you're outside the country, or if you're inside the USA, was solid, was much better. I think there's still a lot for me to learn when it comes to rugby league to be able to pick it. But, you know, it was a solid matching. And then the other game was, like I said, the South Sydney Roosters versus the Brisbane Broncos. And the Broncos, who actually were in the championship game last year, trying to make up and lost a nail biter against the Panthers, they ended up losing this opening game 20-10 against a good Roosters team. I'm not gonna lie, the first half was absolutely horrendously boring to me. 8-4 score is a wild score to have at halftime on so many levels. That again, the scoring was a little bit janky for me, as I'm used to 5-2, not like 4-4. 4-4 or 4-3, and depending on what it is, yeah, it was confusing. But it got better in the second half, and more scoring, and it amped up. You know, like I said, I thought it was very interesting to be able to watch. I think it was a good showing. I don't worry as much about the TV ratings as of right now. Well, number one, it being on Fox Sports, while I know that that's because their partners in Australia is Fox Sports, and, you know, Rupert Murdoch and company have been doing it, and then it eventually went to FS2. Like, number one, FS1 and FS2 are special cable channels here in the U.S., so it's not something that people typically have. It's not part of your basic cable package like it would be if it was an ESPN or so like that. And number two, the timing was difficult, man. When you're talking about the West Coast time, the people that are living in Australia are dealing with a time that is almost, what, 12, 13 hours behind them. So they're, if the game started at like 8 o'clock, you're talking about, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, maybe even later, even earlier than that, for both of the games. So obviously they took it out, though the Australian numbers were actually really good. I think they did 800,000 from that. But from the U.S. numbers, which is what those ones I said, the 61,000 and the 44,000, the U.S. numbers actually, again, hit for, one, the split of the weekend. Number two, I think majority of the fans that would have watched the game probably went to the game. So you're talking about those 40,000. Well, they're at the game. So that's a nice trade-off. I think when it comes to a monetary output, you want the in-stadium to be better than the TV. Let the TV be able to grow with time. And then in terms of, like, access, again, Fox Sports and Fox Sports 1 is not your normal cable channel. Like, who are we trying to fool? Like, it's not. Every time we put games on there, I'm just like, they don't have it on. They have it on streaming, but you got to have a cable, you know, channel. I guess if you have YouTube TV, it helps. But I think that limits it quite a bit. I won't knock the marketing. I think NRL actually did a fantastic job in marketing this and doing a good lead up between. We talked about the NFL showing that they did for the Minnesota Vikings versus Raiders game a few months ago. Obviously, they got billboards up in New York. They've been doing a lot within the Las Vegas and that region and the community. So to be able to get what they did, I think it's fantastic. And for once, I don't think the TV numbers are bad. Even if you look at their YouTube page where the NRL posted the full games, like the games themselves already got like 26, 30,000 views just alone from people who missed it. So I don't think the numbers are going to be a worry. As this five-year deal continues on, I think that's going to be where they need to really start to cultivate that showing. I will say that I would have expected a bigger opening. I think probably the in-stadium was probably more entertaining than the TV broadcast was. But I would say make the TV broadcast. Like, the same reason, the same criticism I have for Miami, I would have said that the NRL needed to do for the TV broadcast. That being said, the energy that they presented on the field was fantastic, was absolutely fantastic. I give them credit for that one. I'm not going to take anything away from them. I'm not an NRL person. I'm not a rugby league person. I'm just trying to learn. So anything that can be done to be able to make me actually go watch a game, I'm going to figure and suggest. I don't know if it's universal, but this is my thoughts on it. All right, let's go. Let's go with it. But I do think. Let me know what you guys' thoughts are. Like, I know a lot of rugby union fans are not rugby league fans, and we all have our biases against rugby league. I'm trying to unwind my brainwashed biases simply because of the fact that, one, I know the history of rugby league, and it really wasn't built on malice. It was built on something that was absolutely necessary and needed. And on the flip side of it, I also have to take away some of the bias that I feel like I have for it, because it removes things like the scrums. Obviously, you don't have engaged scrums. The five downs to try is an interesting concept. The scoring is very different. It really is a different game, in my opinion, and it needs to present itself that. I think the terminology rugby, while it does make sense, it throws it off. But you know, let me know what you guys' thoughts are with it. Like, how did you guys feel like the NRL Las Vegas opening did? How did you guys feel like the energy was for it? If you got a chance to see it, and if you didn't, you know, let me know in the comments. Why did you not watch it? Like, why were you not interested in checking it out for that? So I love to be able to know more about what you guys are thinking on this. All right, y'all. Let's get to some people to take care of us in this moment. We'll be right back. Going to be talking a little bit more of what World Rugby is trying to do to improve the game, despite the fact that there are so many complaints with them meddling in so much. So stay tuned. This is Rugby Swag with Gifte Bailu. We're going to be right back after these messages.
Hey everybody, this is just the break train sending out a personal little video diary to all you people out there, where I am going to document me riding most of the way between Singapore and Tokyo for the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
I needed help, and it came from Louisiana.
We in Singapore, baby!
Gift from Gift Time Rugby USA is an extroverted tour de force, but what unites us is a hunger for adventure.
Off to KL, Kuala Lumpur.
Gift, where are we?
We're in Vietnam!
Morning, Vietnam!
Mount Fuji, baby!
Our love of Asian rugby culture.
1, 2, 3, center!
Yeah! Rugby's is starting to develop here in Cambodia for women as well.
Valkyries, the mighty, mighty Valkyries!
We're out here, we're running out of energy, we're running out of money, and we're feeling isolated. And yet at that critical moment, friends, family, sometimes complete strangers come on board. Before you know it, we're back in the game.
Tokyo, here we come!
Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam. Watch the full adventure at crugby.vhx.tv. That's C like S-E-E rugby.vhx.tv. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. All right, y'all. So I talked about it a little bit before the break, about what is World Rugby absolutely up to. And it looks like World Rugby is trying to once again take their time to see how they can change the game and improve the perception of it based off of the complaints and yada yada. And it's almost like they have an idea, but they're not really listening to the idea. But they had a conference they had a conference recently. I don't know exactly when this was, but they had a conference recently to be able to talk about what are some of the things that they can do to be able to improve the game. The conference was called the it was like the Pace of Game Conference. Oh, 2024 Shape of the Game Forum is what it was called. The 2024 Shape of the Game Forum. And so from that forum, which talks about, you know, players and coaching, officiating competition, fan experts and all these representatives onto a committee and trying to figure out what the long term for rugby, because there's a lot of work that needs to be done for a sport that is absolutely crushing itself in a negative way. What needs to be done? And they came up with 5 whole points that needed to be done with this. All right. So what were the 5 points that World Rugby came up with during this 2024 Shape of the Game forum that was presented? All right, so number one was they wanted to adjust the speed and flow of the game. All right, talking about speeding up the breakdowns, removing some of the repeated scrums, expanding the remit of the shot clock, review of offside laws from kicks, exploring moves to be able to provide the scrum half with greater space and protection at the base of the scrum, rucks, and subsequently mauls. All right, next up, you had the language and presentation of the game, a renewed passion and urgency to focus on building rugby's attention share via a fan-focused view of how the game is marketed, a consistent approach to presenting the presentation of the sport across all media environments, and focus on the moments in the game that really engage the fans. impacting the women's game, a dedication to the focus on female rugby and adapting laws, recognizing the unique characteristics, strength, and opportunities that exist to attract a new audience. Player welfare and well-being, which was a player-driven approach to advances in welfare, including a removal of the croc role and examining the breakdown. And then lastly, disciplinary process review, which is streamlining the sport's disciplinary and sanctioning process to aid efficiency, consistency, and fans' understanding. Now, you guys can actually check this article. It's on sports. It's on Yahoo Sports called World Rugby Unveils 5 Points. So I want to talk about some of these point by point. So first and foremost, I think the speed and flow of the game. Speed and flow of the game and disciplinary process and review, I think, go kind of hand in hand. I think a lot of the complaints has been in the interference of referees in the game, slowing it down, the calls that are being made. Obviously, a lot of it going to player welfare, high hits, or the very, very minute actions that seem to have very large impacts, whether it is impact to the head and it is being called as a red card, even if it was incidental or unintentional, that slows it down, the resets on the scrum. You know, there's so much that's been going with it. I think that this is an area that has been absolutely overly meddled with. I think the speed of the game has actually been fine as it was. I think when it comes to the scrums, again, if you have your knock-ons, you have your offsides, you know, the plays that lead to scrums, go with them. But when it comes to, like, how the scrums are held or collapsing scrums or the rotation of the scrums, which I think, you know, people complain so much about South Africa being able to do just based off of the strength, I think those ones have gotten overplayed, and that's what hurts the speed of the game itself, right? So, like, looking at that, obviously, I think it's removing some of the expectancy. And then it also gives a lot of relief for the refs, because if you guys got a chance, and I never got a chance to talk about it because of the fact that, you know, went on the trip, but the Whistleblowers documentary, which was fantastic look into the refs, whether you have an issue that it only focused on the male refs that were during the Rugby World Cup. But, like, it was really insightful to see the stress that goes with being a ref at a level that is just probably unnecessary for it to be, and especially from the fans. Now, that being said, I do think some of that is cultural. I do think that when it comes to English, French, European refs, I just don't think they're as hard-nosed as it would be with the USA. Shout out to, once again, great American rugby Lance Kavanaugh, being able to show and present exactly what he does as a ref. And shout out to the refs that are from the US that are being able to block out the noise while also simultaneously stand on business when it comes to establishing their refs. That being said, obviously, ref abuse is still a problem in the US as well, too. So that's something that goes in. But I think these things can help alleviate some of those problems that are coming with the referees, and hence it can help speed the game up more and more. The language and presentation of the game, that's the one that I feel has been the most egregiously poorly done. And every time you add another game without actually providing another insight into the background or to the players, or providing any kind of programming that provides lead up or anything that creates anticipation, that is not more than just simply telling us that the games exist and then complaining about Warren Gatland or talking about some stupid complaint that doesn't add anything to the entertainment value, but just revs up the anger, but doesn't provide a rivalry or some reason for us to want to root against or for any of the teams. You suck at whenever you do the presentation. And I hated that US is poor at this. And I hate it even more that the world is absolutely garbage at this. But I do hope that what they're doing with now Rugby Pass TV, obviously we got so many individuals that do it, myself, Squidge, Great American, Rundown, Rugby, blah, blah, blah. We got, you know, people all over the place. Samantha, love it, all them people. But I've said in so many terms that the language and presentation of the game is so much different for the women's side than it is for the men's side, because the women's side have now started to present in a way that is specific to them and the character of them, simply because of the fact that they have not been able to get the attention that they deserve, and so had to create characteristics. Suffering and pressure creates diamonds, whereas on the men's side, because of the fact that there's so many traditional minded and limited, obviously Bill Beaumont is freaking archaic ancientness as I don't know what. Alan Gilpin is an old school mind, so you get old school ideas even when you have a whole council of people who are just on the edge of either Gen X or strong boomers, barely any millennials that go into it, and absolutely, you know, we're not ready for disease. But what I mean by is they do not have a lot of recency, and they also have cultural blockage on the men's side that you don't get a presentation that is entertaining, engaging, or that creates a desire to be able to bring people who do not know the game or not interested in the game into it itself. It is something that if you are in the U.S. especially, I'm going to ignore Aussie land, I'm going to ignore the European, Western Europe, I'm going to ignore the Pacificas in general, but in the U.S. where we are consistently having to prove our point that rugby is not only an existing sport, but is a sport that requires and should deserve more attention than it does, even if we don't necessarily deserve it, you see so many reasons why people in our arena or outside of it just don't ever want to watch the game or don't participate in. They all know it's tough, it's crazy, it's wild, it's chaotic. But whenever we're talking about building the story around it or building the setup around it, we don't do a great job in that. So, sorry, it looks like my Instagram stream just went down. It is what it is. But it hits in a different kind of way where you're just like, we're not bringing the language. So I'm glad that this is something that they are focused on, but I believe that this is something that has a lot greater reach than what people truly realize, which connects back to what is the women's game. And as I said, Reddit, you know, it's adapting the laws and the focus and recognizing the characteristics, strengths, and opportunities. Now, in that, there's coded language in there. And obviously, when it comes to the women's game, I think like one of the things that they've talked about is like trying to shrink the ball for the women's because of small hands or something like that. Which honestly, if you watch from the elite level, women's game is great. It's great. Drops aren't minimal. The play is excellent. You know, the best of the best know what they're doing with it. The problem I think people try and point at is whenever it gets into the secondary, third, and subsequently secondary, third levels, and then subsequently the club youth sides. I don't think shrinking the ball is going to help anything. Maybe for the youth end, you do it because obviously they're kids. But I do think that it would be a massive credibility hit for the women to get smaller balls, because you will subsequently lose the opportunity to be like, oh, a Portia Woodman is one of the greatest of all time because she had to use a smaller ball, but if she had to use a men's ball, she wouldn't have been able to perform the same, which would have been BS, and it doesn't add anything to the women's game. The problem that comes with it is not what the play on the field is. The problem that comes into it is, number one, is the funding that goes into it. Number two is the level of support that's provided to it. Number three is the development of the audience that goes with it. And everything else kind of just follows accordingly from there. So with the women's game, you know, you want to make sure that they're not doing things to diminish the game in the idea of progression. Because, you know, if you know the saying, the road to hell is paved in gold, right? Which means like, yo, going to the bottom can seem really good whenever you have a shiny road to it. Like whenever you have a shiny path to it, doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to a good place. So need to watch out for that one. But I do think that the women's game definitely needs to be focused on more. I'm glad the amount of time that's being put onto 2025, because without the women's game, I don't know if the sport has enough weight to it to be able to elicit the funding that's required for it, the investments that are required from it, and the returns that are needed to be able to do it. And it needs to be a game changer for any other sport. Like WNBA is not the game changer for women's sports. Rugby should be the game changer for women's sports. And obviously you have other ones, tennis and all that, cricket, but they're not going to do the same. Tennis is different, obviously single sport, but none of the other team sports are going to hit the same way that women's rugby is going to hit if they can get their stuff moving forward. So I'd focus on that, and being innovative in that, in my opinion, is crucial. And that one will subsequently help lift elevate the men's game as well, because they're going to need to take ideas. And honestly, that's where it looked like it's going. Then, you know, player welfare and well-being in the disciplinary process and review. I mean, look, again, we have to care about the health of the players. Like, lawsuits are starting to happen. Like, there's been more and more talks about CTE cases. Like, stupid myths like rugby is a safer sport than American football and all that are bad 90s style myths. Like, they're legitimate injuries. Like, we watch every Rugby World Cup or every premiership game or every URC game, and we see the blood flowing from their heads, like, especially from the forward pack. Let's not pretend like that's a normal thing that should be happening right now, all right? That's not normal, all right? So it's something that we have to watch out for. The key is we need to make sure that we're not taking away from the game. And that goes back to the speed and the flow of the game. But it is necessary that we need it. But we also need to make sure that they have the insurance and the health care that they're able to get for it. And I think that one is obvious. But in the fracturing of how the game is from the professional and the various leagues of professional and subsequently the various international test ones, and then obviously way from the collegiate, like, they all have different measures that World Rugby can't have their hands in everything. There needs to be stuff that is specifically set for the unions in those respective manners themselves. I think, like, NCR does some great stuff whenever it comes to player health and insurance and medical and all that good stuff. But overall, like, you need to be able to do better. You need to do more than what is absolutely expected from it now. But you can't do it at the cost of the game. So that healthy balance is huge. But I do think that there's a lot of overcorrection happening. And I'm hoping that this conference is about bringing it back to the middle and finding that ground where, you know, we don't have old guys talking about, like, the game that they love is dying, whereas you have new guys who are just not coming in because they don't feel like they have a chance to be able to thrive in the game as they really should. And obviously, like, the disciplinary process review, like, TMO, like, it's TMO. Like, honestly, TMO has to go. I think there's something with a replay. I think there is something with having a booth review, but I think that there's a limit that goes to it. I think there's a legit time limit, and not just the 10 minutes and then continuing play. I mean, a legit 5-minute time period to go look over it, not to look at every incremental second of it, because what you see on camera is not going to be the same as what happens in real time. And you got to have trust that the refs know what they're doing. And we're taking it back. Like, it's okay for an experiment to fail. Like, it's okay. Just because you did something to move forward doesn't mean that it worked and doesn't mean that you can't go back. Like, maybe you don't go all the way back where the only person that's making the review are the refs. Maybe you add more refs to be able to have reviewability like we do with the sideline judges already. But we need to keep the power of the ruling on the field. And then what happens in the TMO is in the booth, and it needs to be solely based off of a conversation between the ref and the booth. After that 5 minutes, it should be left on there. And there shouldn't be any split flags. There shouldn't be any question. What the ref says when they say it on the field should be the final decision, not TMO. What's happening from a distance means nothing. All right. It's too much. And it puts the security of the TMO match officials at risk. It puts the credibility of the refs on the field at risk. And it ruins the totality of the game. It's okay to roll it back a little bit. Oregon's doing it. They had a whole drug law. We're going to decriminalize everything in Oregon. We're going to work on rehabilitation, and we're going to take away harsh penalties. And they just got smacked by overdoses and just deaths. And you say, is that enough time? Nah, it's you don't have to risk everything for it. Like, it's okay, let's roll it back a little bit and then we'll just rework it again. But I think that's the same way that World Rugby needs to do when it comes to these disciplinary issues, and especially also, like, talking about the ref. Like, I do actually believe that there should be really harsh penalties for the coaches to talk about the refs. Like, I think that there should be a coaches to a representative for talking, complaining about the refs. I think that representative should speak to the press about what has been presented to them so that there isn't a direct line from coach to ref. And then from there, you make your decision and start to work things out. The problem is whenever the coaches are now complaining about the refs every freaking time, like when the coaches complain about it, it gives permission for the fans to complain, and it gives permission for the fans who are deranged and psychotic to go after the refs on social media or threaten death threats or anything like that. And that's not where it should be. Even with the players, I think there should be a level of harsh penalty because of the fact that it provides permission that they don't realize they have the ability to give for fans. And you need to control the fans, and you need to control the aspect of the players. And also put responsibility on yourself for sucking. Like, just put responsibility on yourself for sucking. It's one thing. Just, yeah, if you didn't get the win, you didn't get the win. If you say the refs threw it off, hey, you know what that meant? That means that the plays that you did right beforehand actually effed you over more than what happened at that point. That point was just simply a culmination of what was not being done right prior to. So I want more support to be put, more pressure to be put on the play, the coaches, and the players than they need to be put on the refs, who are just there to organize the game. And it's gotten to such a point that you're just like, the refs are becoming stars by organizing the games. And we should not know that much about the refs. We really should not know that much about the refs. So I hope that in that factor, they work on the disciplinary committee on that one and figure out their ish through that. All right, let's go. Let me know what your guys' thoughts are. I know I went on a bit of a ramble, but I think there was a lot that we have to talk about when it comes to this, because there's so much to build on. And it's, you know, this game needs a lot of work right now, which is a positive and a negative, but it needs a lot of work to be able to get through. And I really do want it to be better. So let me know what you guys' thoughts are on it. Let me know where you feel with it. What do you think about the 5 points, and where do you think World Rugby might need to focus if it's not those 5 points? All right, moving on to our last subjects of the day. And this is one that is very interesting in terms of the development of rugby in the US, and obviously the initiatives that are being needed to really try and bring more attention in the US. So World Rugby made a mention recently that they wanted to utilize the Pacific Nations Cup as a means of exposing the USA to more rugby. All right. Which, again, is dope. Now, the reason this is also very significant is also the Pacific Nations Cup is being used as an elevation into the tier one, tier two, tier three ranges of play. If you guys remember, the World Rugby Series that's going to be happening every year starting in, what, 2025, 2026, that the Pacific Nations Cup actually literally allows teams to enter into it. So the U.S. and Canada would have this opportunity to be a part of that versus Japan and Argentina already existing in it, and then obviously Fiji in the Tier 1 range. So But what they wanted to bring out from the Pacific Nations Cup is that they want to use the U.S. as the jumping ground. So one of the things that they were very, very, very proud about is that they are going to open up and close games in Los Angeles to put it on the biggest stage again. Great. It's a great idea. And if you guys don't know, let me backtrack. Pacific Nations Cup involves Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, Canada, Japan, and the USA. And they want to put them into that. This allows them to be in that, this competition to be in the same various echelon as the rugby championships and the Six Nations. They want to put them in that field for the Pacific Nations plus USA and Canada. But like, wanting to rebrand it and place it into the Los Angeles where they feel like the exposure will be at its best and highest is an interesting take, to say the least. Again, this works if you utilize the entertainment nature of the area. Otherwise, you're just talking about a place that the time zone is at the worst possible time. and you're actually pulling away. Yes, the West Coast has it, but the majority of attention goes towards East Coast time. Like that Central to East Coast is better TV time than Mountain to West Coast, I think, in my opinion. I think it got proven a lot this past weekend. So utilizing that, but on the flip side of it, you also have the women's side where you have the Pacific Four series that involve USA, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia, and wanting to utilize that as a mechanism to obviously promote 2025 Rugby World Cup and then subsequently 2031 Rugby World Cup and also 2027 Rugby World Cup in Australia. So, like, you have these mechanisms that are being used to attract this more attention. But again, the issue that goes back to the exposure, I don't think is necessarily the lack of high-level games, but it's the lack of the stories and the presentation, as we talked about in the 5 points, that are not being presented well. This is a marketing issue, not a game issue, because, again, TV series, if you're seeing numbers that are 61,000, that are under 100,000 viewers, you're going to have a difficult time of being able to get these broadcasters to want to pay for the games. You're just paying to put them on a screen that you believe has more range. And yes, to some extent, putting it on terrestrial TV is necessary because it's valuable real estate. But on the other side of it is it's not valuable for the ad selling broadcasters. So if you're not putting a story behind it that gets people over to it, and it's not just simply putting up the billboards, but it is doing the interviews. It is doing a tour of interviews and putting them in places where you can increase the SEO, to increase the number of explanations that go on social media and TikTok, and doing things that do not feel like they're commercial corporate gigs, but feel human and subsequently add to it. Like, I still want to know what the numbers came from after Six Nations full contact, how they did for the Six Nations at this moment. Obviously, we're still watching it, or how it did for the first games of it. And, you know, we don't know what the numbers are because we still haven't heard about a season two being announced yet. So it doesn't give me a whole lot of hope, but I need to know, like, you have these methods that you're going to create branches that lead us to these games, and hence those games now matter. Otherwise, the exposure that you're looking at is just going to be basically the same fan base over and over, where you might get 25, 35, 40,000 that are going to go to a game, probably for the both of these Pacific Nations as well as Pacific Four series. You're probably looking at 25, 35,000 people maybe that are going to go to the games, depending on the weekend that you do it. God forbid you do it on another calamitous weekend that has three major rugby matches that are happening in the U.S. all at the same time. And that just splits the nation across the coast. But you also are adding to the value factor that these games are, because even with the women's game, like, again, there's so many women's games that are happening, like another USA-Canada game, and we're talking about what, 1,500, 1,000 people, 2,000 people that are going, because, and then it doesn't even really get streamed or broadcast anywhere significant. So how are people supposed to be able to get exposed to the game if you're not putting them in places where they have access and you're not giving them reasons to go and invest into those games? So I have questions when it comes to how they want to perceive this exposure the way they want to, especially with everything leading into it. Yes, they're great games to have from a rugby standpoint, but again, the one that you need to get when it comes to 2031 and 2033 are casuals. You got to win the casuals. If you don't win the casuals, especially by 2028, you're going to have a very hard time, and none of these games are going to mean anything, and it's just millions and millions of dollars that are just going through the ringer regardless. Just going through the ringer. Like, that's goes without saying. All right. So again, yo, let me know what you guys think about this, man. Do you feel like the Pacific Nations Cup, do you feel like the Pacific Four series has enough juice to be able to increase exposure? Or do you feel like there needs to be a different look? Do you think it might be less games? Do you think it might be more games? You know, where is your thoughts? For me, like I said, I don't think more games are necessarily the issue, even though that's the product that you sell. But again, I think that you need to put more value on the games that are already existing. And then obviously make sure that the players are increasing, which is where I guess obviously the more games are going to be playing into it accordingly. But man, it is definitely one that I'm not impressed with the thought process because I don't feel like they're seeing it through. All right, y'all. Let's get to our last commercial for the day, and then we'll get back with responding to the comments that have been sitting forever. Yo, we'll be right back. This is Gift Time, a Bailey Rugby Swag Show. Let's go.
Before I let you guys get back to it, I want you guys to go check out rugbyoutletmall.com. Yo, this is the place where we are bringing in casual rugby wear. We're trying to set up the designs, make sure that we are giving you something to represent rugby. That's not just a jersey, and that's not just your kit. It is something that you and your friends and your mama and your kids and your parents and your best friend and your wife and your husband and your boyfriend and girlfriend and your they, and just make sure that everybody is able to rock some rugby gear without having to necessarily be stuck to any one type of rugby gear. We want it for your day-to-day, everyday life. I know that's redundant, but that's how beautiful we want it to be. You know, definitely check out our most recent update, our Rugby Swag Show shirts. They're available now for purchase. You guys can get it. And for any first-time buyers, I'm talking to you. Yo, I'm giving you guys 20% off the first purchase. Take as many as you want, 20% off the first purchase. And of course, if you guys get on the newsletter, you guys are going to see more coupons and discounts that come along with that as well too. But 20% off, and all you guys need to use is coupon code GROWRUGBY. That is GREAUX Rugby. Great quality gear, definitely something for your present, something to be able to give. Obviously, we just got past the year, so that means birthdays are coming out. Valentine's Day is just around the corner, and you have so much more. Go hook your family, hook your people up with what's right. Hook your people up with what's right. Go to rugbyoutletmall.com and enjoy out. And of course, it helps support the show and our media endeavors. Let's get you back.
All right, y'all. Look, we are back. We are back. We are back. All right, let's look at the comments. Obviously, it's been a few weeks since we've been able to have some stuff, so we got a lot of comments. I'm gonna go through some of them because there is a lot. I don't wanna bog us down too much with it all. But I this is one of my favorite parts of the show because I do absolutely enjoy talking and responding to them. So thank you to everybody who drops a comment and has continued to engage and participate in this consistently, man. I am fully grateful to you. All right, let's go ahead and take a look at what we got. All right, starting off over in the comments, I gotta big this up. First off, okay, let's go. USA Rugby League Union fan, talking about our conversation with Eusebio Guinezu, who did a phenomenal job in explaining to us about it. Yo, give shout out to my guy, Rashad Brown. Yo, man, thank you. Good to see you as well, too, brother. I hope you are doing well. Man is a graphic designer, savant, worked with Jacksonville Jaguar, man. Man's doing it great. I appreciate him. College life, man, USF. Shout out to, but yeah, what Argentina has done in rugby has been phenomenal. I think this was, I agree with it. And I'm so grateful to Eusebio for providing the information along with that. I'll kind of follow up with that with Ash Mac 234. The rugby world needs South American rugby, which I agree. I agree. I think this is one of those things where we have so much to learn, and they are such a powerhouse, and they've been in that kind of middle ground between everybody. So I think they're setting up a great pathway and a blueprint on how to do grassroots rugby in a country that is very large, which is something that is replicable in the U.S. because we have it. Even if our population is much larger, but they're dealing with economic droughts that are much heavier. So we have a lot of commonality that we should set up the blueprint for this. Cameron Poirier, 8590, also saying thank you for this, and I appreciate you guys for taking the time to watch it. Marty Heath Dunn, 8509, goes, it's all rugby league in Australia, known as the greatest game of all. I love your show, mate. Thank you. Please cover at least 50% rugby league in your show, especially promotion rugby league, not rugby union. Across the USA, rugby union is bringing dying almost dead in Australia. Very few people follow it. It's gone. The newspapers are full of rugby league. Lucky to find one or half a page of union daily. Rugby league dominates, known by most people as league, not rugby league, but league. It is now and has become the ultimate toughest, fastest team sport in the world, with ice hockey, NHL running second to league. Great show, but you must cover league, NR Australia, Super League in UK, please. Union is slow, boring, dying. Thanks, mate. Marty from Sydney, Australia. Hey, man, Marty, I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm going to try and see if I can bring in more rugby league. Like I said, I am in the process of deconstructing the biases that have been placed inside me as a rugby union person about my thoughts and feelings about rugby league. Don't get me wrong, it's going to be a work in progress. It feels almost discriminatory, but it really has been. So I will try and bring in more rugby league and see how I can do better to follow it. And do my part to be able to grow the games on both sides, because clearly I do think that there is a place for both of them. I don't agree so much that union is slow, boring. I do know that it's dying in Australia, and I do know it's very much hurting worldwide, but I don't feel like it is in a position where it's lost, and I think there's a lot of capability. And of course, I'm always going to be biased because it's my first love when it comes to the terminology of rugby. Though, like I said, I see where the interest for league is, and thankfully, based off of shows like the Rugby Odds that I do on Rugby Wrap Up channel with Matt McCarthy and John Bradford Layfield and George Hook, I'm able to now interact with rugby league more and have to pay attention. So I'll try and do better to be able to bring them on and to be able to have those discussions so that we can continue to just balance it out and, enjoy it for everybody, man. And now that they're doing stuff within the U.S., I think they are now particularly that much more interesting to me to do something with it. Malcolm Clayton, 6651, he actually was responding to the video that we did several months ago about the Toronto Arrows falling apart. It's a little bit late, but he was like, it just couldn't make a little bit of money. Unfortunately, no, it really couldn't. The Toronto Arrows were just not a viable investment, especially after Bill Webb passed away. His widow and their investment group, they said that it wasn't worth the value, and unfortunately, it's not going to come back. You know, we'll see what happens with rugby in Canada. But in terms of right now, in terms of professional rugby with the MLR, it just was not the thing. And it is a big shame, because Canada is a rugby arena that has a great youth program, but it is also very much hurting at the elite level. And it needs everything to do to be able to get it back. My guy, Joe Ritchie, too, responding to our interview that we did with Eddie Evans, who is the owner and founder of Bangkok 10's International Rugby Tournament. We talked about it at the beginning of the episode. Good timing for this. Look forward to catching up with you and meeting Eddie at the 10s. Absolutely did get a chance to meet up with Joe. Love it. Met up with Joe's wife. Great conversations. Great rugby. Man, I'm again, it was an absolute pleasure. I regret nothing. This was an expensive trip, but it was so worth the value, and I'm so happy I did it, and I can't wait to be able to do it again. Rit the Rugger actually continued and actually responded to that same interview. He said, despite being an American, I've known all about the concept of boot money since the late 70s. What I don't understand is, if he was playing in New Zealand, who was putting English pounds in his boots? And when it comes to the cup in the U.S., I'm afraid that they are going to spread it around too much. If your team plays in LA one week, New York the next, Dallas the next, then Seattle, Atlanta, et cetera, if that happens, tourists will end up bankrupting themselves and spending an entire month traveling. So let's kind of break up two parts. Number one, I think when it comes to the boot money per se, what Eddie was dealing with was early in his career, whenever he was 18. And again, New Zealand is, a Commonwealth, is a former territory of England. So you're talking about in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, of course they're still going to be using pounds, you know, use the Queen's dollars. Definitely probably was worth more than New Zealand dollars itself. And add to that, probably the people who are funding it had some connection with England at that time because he was working at ports. So if you guys know, like, especially in Asia and Pacific, yo, expats are a dime a dozen. So you're talking about people who are going to be coming in and they're working off of pounds, but they're working in areas that are outside of their region. So it makes sense as to why they would have been using the English pounds. And then in terms of the Rugby World Cup in the U.S., I think there is a legitimate concern about that, especially because of the size of the country. I think what's going to end up happening is something similar to what you had to do with Japan, though Japan's infrastructure was significantly better for the travel. So when you did the Rugby World Cup in Japan, obviously you had games in literally every region of Japan outside of the island. God, it starts with a K. Where the Karate Kid guy is from, not Kyoto. I can't remember the island. If you guys know it in the comments, please let me know. Repeat it, but you did it. You went to, you know, Kyoto. You went down. You were in Tokyo. You're going to all these locales. I think the issue is going to be, like, when it comes to the tourists, it's really just going to depend on specific cities. I don't think they're going to hit every single major city. I don't think it's possible to do it. And to the extent that, like you said, I think it's going to be about bankrupt. It'll bankrupt any travelers. I think what will happen is we'll see games in Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, or at least New Jersey, or somewhere around that area. Probably maybe Charlotte, now that USA Rugby's over there, but probably Charlotte area, but I think Philadelphia or New Jersey area. And then maybe Dallas, Austin, or possibly Miami, though I don't know if Miami has that infrastructure yet. But I think you'll see only maybe like four or so cities. And then from there, it's going to be the major games. But the centralized one is probably going to be in either LA or it's going to be on the East Coast in Charlotte or in New Jersey, Philadelphia, New York area. Like, honestly, so I don't think they're going to wear out the tourists when it comes to the games. And they're going to keep the games at least somewhat centralized where the championship game is going to be played. So the most heavy-hitting games are going to happen. Probably the least important games will play out in these wider spread cities, because there's also money for the teams as well. Like, it's a financial burden for the teams as well. So, gonna go skip. No issues to Joe. JPJH884 responded to our talk about Welsh rugby star heading to NFL, and I listed out a bunch of rugby union players who had gone to play in the NFL or attempted to. And he mentioned, you leave out the biggest success of the IPP, which is Jordan Mialota, who came from Australian rugby. And I responded to it, and if you're seeing on the YouTube, you'll see it, but I responded to it where I said, the reason why I don't think that Jordan Mialota counted inside my description, because he's a rugby league player. He's a league player. And rugby league players, it was just a difference. It's a different element, because we've seen them go as well too. But I did mention that I do think that the only players that have done well in terms of the transition from rugby to the NFL have been players that are in the trenches. So offensive linemen, defensive linemen. I don't think that skill players, running backs, wide receivers, which this was in reference to Louis Reese Zammit, they haven't done well in the NFL. And I think it makes sense, because it's very nuanced. Not to say that the trenches aren't nuanced, but the trenches, linemen are footwork, you know, are footwork or placement, and then it's strength. So you need to be able to make sure you're speedy, need to make sure you can get into position. But you're not running routes. You're remembering plays, you're remembering positioning, but you're not running routes. You're not trying to outweigh the defense. And some of that is just instinctual that plays in, which is, you know, same thing with rugby. One, U.S. has its own issues with it, but yeah. So it wasn't forgotten in that factor. Rit the Rugger responded to our interview with Dr. Rosalind Chow. Great interview. Definitely go check it out. He said, I don't know if I missed it, but what happened to the academic sisters? Did they get doctorates, or is Ross the only doctor in the family? Not 100% sure. I didn't go that far into it, but I would make assessment that they've all done well and done at least some postgraduate work, if I remember correctly. He continued on to say, my first time coaching was the Colorado Old Girls mid-late 80s. I was coaching what Roslyn described as modern rugby. I taught the backs to ruck and the forwards to count the bodies in the ruck. Even the penalties play scattered the forwards. I remember early on, we were awarded a penalty and the other team's forwards standing all together looking to match our pack, looking around asking, where is their pack? It was three passes, quick ruck, four passes, quick ruck, four pass, try. I think their pack is still trying to find out where our pack went. Right. You know, again, great, great look. And, you know, the game of rugby continues to expand and develop. And, you know, whenever you have coaches like Billy Nicholas, who was formerly with Lindenwood, and Roz, who now with Brown Rugby, you know, they're bringing in a game that's quicker, you know, and that's the normality of it. A lot of that old school game that we learn at club, especially early on, is very pack heavy and grounded, which I don't mind because I think the pack is still incredibly important and probably one of the most important places in terms of stabilizing the game. But you want to move the ball out and spread it out wide so you can take advantage of the spacing. And that's the way it goes. At viewer 123, in response to the British and Irish Lions making a super league, they responded, there's no reason why unions in these respective areas can't try to improve the structure of the leagues locally while boosting rugby globally. Personally, I think a stronger league in Europe and South Africa would help to boost the image of rugby globally. I don't think you're wrong in that one either. I think that there is a place that goes with it, but I think, again, it comes back to one, with especially with South Africa and Europe, one, do you have the population to be able to cover the costs needed to be able to elevate those games and provide a lot more stability to them? And number two, are you able to find somewhere where you can find the financing that can help create a sort of trickle-down effect and build out from the grassroots, or really build the grassroots and develop a stronger pillar that can help elevate then the elite games and actually bring more casuals and bring more viewers who would want to be able to watch and understand this. I'm going to go two more and then I'll let this one go. Going out to my guy, Joe Ritchie, in response to our recent interview with Damonte Noble. If you guys want to check it out, definitely episode 114. He goes, does Noble see himself more as a seven specialist despite the MLR work, or did Kutztown play both 15s and 17s? So I can at least answer for Kutztown. They definitely did play both 15s and 7s. And I know that he definitely has worked on both sides. I don't know if I can speak for Nobles, but I would make the assumption that I think he resonates more on the 7 side than on the 15 side. But I don't think he shies away from the 15s. I think both work because he just likes the game. He likes the ball. And I think currently right now he's obviously in Australia, I think playing 15s, if I remember, 15s or 10s, one of those two. And so I think he's doing well. But I think whatever allows him to have the space to be able to do the job that he wants to be able to do, I think that's wherever he really finds out his strength from there. So, all right, y'all. I think that's where we're going to end up cutting it, y'all. I hope that you guys absolutely enjoyed what we were able to do today. Thank you guys for taking the time to talk to you. To go and be on a trip. We're going to try and really make sure that we pump these out again every week. Obviously, we bring our interviews on Monday and obviously do the new show on Wednesdays. So, you know, if you can bring more people, more updates, more conversation, more participation, we're going to be trying to get more of these clips up for our social media so that there's easier to share and be able to direct people to what we're trying to do. But most importantly, we want to be able to make sure that we are keeping you guys up to date. And even more, if you already know what's been going on, keeping your spouses up to date in a way that is a little bit more congested, more contained and a little bit simpler. And we're able to, you know, really revise what we need to have going on. And I really do appreciate everybody who has been taking the time to participate and give just credence to all that we do. Absolutely want you guys to please definitely go check out our other interviews. Obviously, like I just mentioned before, we had Damonte Noble as our last interview. Prior, we had Dr. Rosalind Chow, Eddie Evans. Prior to that, we had Wendy Young of Your Scrum Half Connection, and so many more. Like I've said, we had movie actors, we've had rugby captains, rugby World Cup stars, administrators for World Rugby, people who change the game. And we really want to make sure that we're creating the story and providing you guys the access to those who are can explain the game from its perspective outside the fans and outside of our, you know, our respective communities and thought processes, and allows us to be able to learn, grow, develop, and continue to kick butt the way that it needs to be. But I hope that you guys have an amazing week. Look forward to seeing you guys back here next week. And in the meantime, I hope that you know that I hope that you are happy. I hope that you are healthy. And most importantly, from the bottom of my heart, to your mind, to your value, to your worth, I hope that you know that you are truly highly favored. Until next time, y'all. Cheers. And tomorrow she won't